Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
From high atop the milk packing district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News. A one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A broken water main floods part of northeast Portland. A Longview couple plead guilty to enslaving a woman in their home, and a businessman attacks his employees with a medieval axe.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Wednesday, August 3rd, 2011. A break in a water main dropped tap pressure and flooded streets around Northeast 69th and Halsey this morning. The spill affected the blocks between 69th and 65th and Halsey to Pacific, just south of I-84. Neighbors started reporting problems around 4 a.m., and the water was shut down around 6 a.m. In addition to low pressure, water had seeped into the basements of homes, and tap water was discolored. Portland Fire Bureau crews went door-to-door to alert residents. Northwest Natural Gas also shut down lines. Portland Water Bureau spokeswoman Terry Black said, "You may have to shower at the gym this morning or go without one to go to work."
And this is happening where?
This was Northeast 69th and Halsey.
Yes, the people in that neighborhood, they may have to be unclean for a day. They may have to be covered with a thin layer of grime and self-hatred. Just for today, though.
Or, you know, shower at the gym.
Yes.
Because you know that they...
Shower at the health club that your company's health plan provides for you.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Stop by the club on the way, won't you, as well, and speak to Biff and Muffy for me?
Certainly your gentleman's club has a steam room where you can spiff up before you go into the bank. Tell people who live at 69th and Halsey.
Quick, I desire to be rubbed with rough-hewn towels. Thank you for joining us today. It is Tuesday?
Wednesday.
I see. It's Wednesday, August 3rd, 2011. Thank you for joining us. Legion of News comes to you here from Cascadia.fm. Coming up later on this hour, entertainment news, also science in the march. You can also get it via iTunes if you like, or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. Here is Don Taylor.
A Micronesian couple living in Longview, Washington.
Are tiny.
They are. They're this big. They pleaded guilty Tuesday in federal court in Tacoma in a human trafficking case.
Oh.
Prosecutor said the couple, 29-year-old Ed Kennett, there's no vowel in his name.
Okay.
It's Ed Kennett. And 31-year-old Choimina Lucas forced an 18-year-old woman from their homeland to work for them. The Daily News of Longview reports the two pleaded guilty to document servitude and face up to 5 years in prison when they're sentenced on October 21st. The two admitted they recruited the woman in March to care for their three children and forced her to cook and clean 7 days a week without pay. They also forced her to get a job and then took her wages.
I know that servitude is a real word, but it doesn't... They forced her to do the housifying for the enslavification.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound real.
No, it doesn't sound. But it is indeed a real word.
Okay.
And a thing you shouldn't do.
And it lasted until the woman escaped from them in February.
Well, really, she learned valuable life skills, such as tunneling with a small spoon.
Also, if you're forcing somebody to get a job, doesn't that kind of mean that you're, like, making
forcing them to leave the
to
house?
Leave the house?
Yeah.
So you're just asking to lose your... they're going to go get a job, and somebody's going to go, you do what?
This is sometimes the self-defeating nature of crime, I think, is they fail to think these plans through from A to Z. I mean, really, in a fully and completely accurate sense.
One of her coworkers at the Kinko's saying... No, that's not right.
No, what's the metal collar around your neck? I know.
You do what with your money? Then you do what? Okay, we need to have a talk.
You're beaten with, a chair. Okay, well, that's no good. You're listening to Legion of News. Thank you for joining us on this Wednesday, you're saying.
It is indeed. As everything on my computer says it's Wednesday, so I can only I can only trust that it is true.
That's what the man wants you to think. Anyway.
I don't believe that HP would lie to me.
No, of course not.
About what day it is.
No, would they never. Nor would they lie to you about the overheating tendency of some of their laptops, or the fact that they can't recognize black people.
Mozilla Firefox would never steer me wrong on what day it is.
Well, no, that's true.
Yeah.
You're listening to Legion of News. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
A small business owner assaulted one of his employees with an axe, according to the Frederick News Post. I'm not sure exactly what state this is, but it doesn't matter. Somewhere called Frederick.
Was it in Akron, Ohio?
No. Okay. No, it wasn't in... I couldn't think of anything. Police charged Andrew Francis Scalera, 44, with first and second degree assault in the attack. Authorities said he used a decorative medieval-style axe. The incident happened after midnight on Monday at his home. Three employees were filling out work orders there for Scalera's painting business. The victim told police Scalera accused him of stealing quarters, and an argument ensued that escalated into violence. The man told police he hit Scalera to free himself from his grip, and then Scalera went back to his bedroom and returned with an axe, a decorative medieval axe.
Well, this appears to be a bit more than decorative, by the way.
And came after the man, threatening to kill him.
Okay.
The man told police he threatened to spray Scalera with pepper spray if he didn't back down, but Scalera then struck him with the axe just as he was trying to spray him. He said Scalera then tried to hit him again, but he moved out of the way, and Scalera broke the glass in the door.
So it seems to be also a bit more than threatening. It's not a decorative axe if you're attacking a guy with it, and it's not just threatening if you're then swinging it on the on the guy.
It ceases to become purely decorative as soon as you are wielding it.
It has both form and function, and all for one low price. Also, when you say that they were arguing over stolen quarters, was this like a quarter gram of some valuable drug?
No, I believe it was just quarters. He believed that this guy had stolen his quarters.
Was it a bag of 100,000 quarters?
Maybe, I don't know, maybe he... Yeah.
Are quarters suddenly worth more and no one has told me? Was it a collection of valuable quarters because George Washington had been given a funny hat?
Maybe he's a fan of your retro style video games, and he must have quarters to play his games at the video
arcade.
Was
he one of the local numismatics?
I don't know what that word means.
Never mind.
No. This was just outside of Washington, D.C., actually.
Okay.
So maybe quarters mean more there. Maybe they are a more valuable form of currency in the Washington, D.C. area.
If it's just outside of Washington, D.C., I think we may be talking about the quarter that I mentioned right at the beginning of this series of questions. I mean, that's just a guess.
Yeah.
I could be way off.
No. The guy did get a 2-inch gash in his forearm, the medieval axe. And once he was subdued, it appears that Scalera tried to apologize.
Really?
But he's still facing first and second degree assault.
Sorry about the axing and the bleeding and the hey.
Sorry, I just, I'm sorry about the whole, I guess his employees, it's a weird story because I have a different story here where apparently he was asleep and the guys who worked for him were there filling out their work orders while he was sleeping, and he woke up and then came out and accused the employee of stealing quarters from his room.
Wait, but this
and
is
then
the,
started choking him.
Wait a minute, but this is at the house.
Yeah, this is at his house.
And yet, but one works for the other.
Right.
Is it a home-based business?
It's a painting business, so he...
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Okay, so it's not like Herbalife, but they were still... But, I mean, they...
Right.
Now, did they live together?
No, I don't think so. I think they were just there to fill out some stuff for work while he was sleeping, I guess.
He's the owner of the business.
You guys do the paperwork. I'm going to go take a nap. And then he wakes up and says, "Where's my quarters?" And then just gets all choky and axy.
Okay. It's just a house of fun there, isn't
yeah.
it? All right.
Don't work for this guy. If you live in Frederick, whatever that is.
This is really one of those things where I wish that I was just able to use some sort of, Dumbledore pensieve just to go and just look into the house at that moment and just see what was happening.
Yeah.
So perhaps in the future.
Or just call him and say, "So what's with the quarters?
What is up with you, man?
What is the deal with the quarters, sir?"
Just a bit of an overreact. Yeah. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Hear that? Haven't brushed my teeth yet.
Oh.
Thank you for joining us. Don't forget.
We can all tell.
Yeah, I know. It's I'm filling the microphone with a furious funk. It's not just five fingers of funk. It's also a mighty maw. Of funk. Coming up later on this hour, entertainment news, science on the march, next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program, during which, I swear to God, Burgerville's just going to be bringing us, like, pallets of food.
I am so looking forward to this.
I mean, why brush? Why brush now? Really, honestly, what am I, you know?
I actually was timing my my breakfast so I could figure out, like, how to make sure that I wasn't absolutely starving when
you
they got
breakfast?
Here.
You ate breakfast?
Yeah. Well,
did you hear me say that Burgerville's going to be bringing us piles of stuff?
Not till like 2:30.
Okay.
You know?
All right.
And I also don't want to be so hungry that I make a fool of myself. I want to maintain some dignity.
Sure.
With all the free burgers.
Okay. No, I understand. No, really, seriously. What's the reason?
No, that was it. I really didn't want to be sitting here going, "Hamburgers, and just acting like some kind of ravenous buffoon.
I see that you wore a shirt with an elaborate pattern of tapestry on it, though, so that you
right.
can spill things with impunity and it won't be noticed.
I am going to be eating, and we know that when I eat, food just starts flying willy-nilly.
Fantastic. So that's next hour at RickEmersonShow.com, where you, yes, you, can listen for the low cost of just 32 cents a day. We want to welcome a brand new, in fact, this may not be a brand new subscriber. I think this is someone who moved, and during the move, he had to suspend his subscription while the move was on. This is Randall, or Randy. Randy, formerly of Vegas, and now he lives somewhere else, I think. Anyway, so we want to welcome, or perhaps re-welcome, subscriber Randy to the Rick Emerson Show. And again, you can find out how to subscribe at rickemersonshow.com. Don't forget, your first week is free. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
A missing Portland hiker who became separated from her boyfriend while camping in the Mount Hood National Forest is now listed in fair condition at Legacy Emanuel Hospital. An Oregon Army Guard helicopter crew spotted 28-year-old Pamela Salant sitting on a rock in Lindsay Creek about a mile and a half north of Bear Lake on Tuesday afternoon. She began waving when the helicopter crew saw her. Her boyfriend told Fox News that everyone is just relieved. I'm really proud of her. Salant suffered injuries to her back, leg, and knee, but is expected to be fine. Her boyfriend, Eric Essig, said that she got lost when the couple separated Saturday afternoon after dropping off their gear at a campsite at Bear Lake. She fell off a high cliff. She knew how she had to get water, he said, so she scooted her way down the steep hill and found water and drank from a stream. Salant survived 3 nights without supplies, food, or water, wearing only shorts and a tank top. Essex said, at night she was really cold, so she covered herself with moss. She ate berries, and she ate a caterpillar and a slug. Anything she could do to survive.
I wonder if she ate them all at once, or she had, you know, in other words, did she eat them in the order she found them? Or did she find all those things and go, okay, I'm just going to work my way up to the slug? You know, or if,
yeah.
like, it'd be, here's what would suck. I mean, all of these things, but then especially, like, if you found, like, I don't know, like a big mouthwatering bowl of slugs somewhere. And then you went, well, it's either this or meet my maker, I suppose. And then around the corner, there was like a cheeseburger tree.
Well, yeah. I always, in my mind, if I got lost like this, in my mind, it would always be like the end of The Mist. That,
totally.
Like, as soon as I eat the slug, then the helicopter's going to come.
Yeah.
So I would just kind of be like going, okay, how hungry am I? Okay, no, not yet. Okay, I'm really, really hungry. Okay, not yet.
Or you would announce.
I'd listen for the helicopter. Okay, I still don't hear anybody coming.
You might announce to the universe, though. You know, you say, like, and so those slugs were pretty tasty. No, it was great. No, it was okay.
Sure,
it
would
fantastic.
Be a shame if somebody showed up now, right after I ate the slug. Yeah.
So how long was she lost?
She was lost for 3 nights without any supplies or food or water.
So the surviving 3 days without water is the really impressive part.
They said the first thing she did was she scooted her way down a hill and found a stream and was drinking water.
Okay.
So she did, but then they said she didn't have water. Well, she didn't have any with her. So I think that's the thing. She didn't have.
She was lost without food and water.
Right.
Found some water.
Right.
And then eventually the slugs and the.
And then covered herself with the moss to stay warm and ate the berries and ate the caterpillar. And yeah.
The caterpillar I could get with because it doesn't seem as overtly squishy. Also, no. They're kind of cute, so you have that going for
you. As long as you know what kind of caterpillar, because aren't there some that are poisonous?
Sure, whatever. I mean, there's some of everything poisonous.
I assume everything in nature will kill me, which is why I never leave the city.
Well, that's why you've got to eat it before it gets the chance.
Yeah.
I'm going to kill you. Yeah. Not now.
You also have to eat it raw, because she didn't have any supplies, so she couldn't cook it. Although, I guess you can't really cook a slug.
Did I ever... Are you kidding? Did I ever show
Wouldn't
you
that... Wouldn't it just melt?
Did I ever show you that picture of my wife eating a bowl of grubs?
No.
Yeah.
Was this one of her third world adventures?
When she was in the Amazon and, yeah. And living as the native peoples apparently do, because they don't have Taco Bell.
Yeah.
Seriously, it was like full on Gilligan's Island stuff. It was like out of like a half, it wasn't a coconut, but it was like out of a half, like, half coconut type thing that they made out of the husk of some gigantic berry or whatever. And it's the bowl. You know, it was like going to some horrible hell version of the bulk foods aisle at Trader Joe's. Where instead of, like, scooping out, like, you know, chocolate chips or perhaps barley out of one of those big barrels, they're just going, all right, hold on a second. And they're just scooping out a big bowl full of slugs and handing it to her, you know. And then she's, you know, hold on, let me get my Nikon. And then smiling as she's just getting a mouthful of slug.
Uh-uh.
I mean, seriously.
No.
I mean,
the weirdest thing I ever ate was grasshoppers. And they'd been cooked. And
yeah.
They were seasoned with something.
They were
crunchy.
I asked her if these were cooked, and she said they were warmed, which is almost worse.
That's almost worse.
That's just right off the ground.
It is definitely worse.
Seriously. All right. But then I swear to God, then they demonstrated how they hunt things using poisoned piranha teeth. And so that made it all worthwhile. That was the upside of that. Is like once she'd hurtled past that gauntlet, they said, okay, we're gonna show you this awesome thing we do with razor teeth. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, you can also take this with you on your mobile device. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
Casey Anthony's lawyers are fighting a judge's order that she serve a year of supervised probation in Florida on a check fraud conviction. Florida Corrections Department spokeswoman Gretel Plessinger responds to lawyers' arguments that returning Anthony to Florida would put her life in danger.
Right now, we have not received any threats. If we get to the point where we do receive threats, we'll begin working with local law enforcement and take any precautions at that point that we may need, depending upon the threat.
All right. It sounds patently unbelievable that they have not received threats of any kind, because didn't we have like 2 solid weeks of stories about how she's being threatened constantly every day?
Yeah, and somebody like tried to run over a woman with her car just because she looked like her.
Also, there were people outside the courthouse holding signs that said things like, you know, give her the gas and
burn in hell, baby murderer.
Seriously, I will kill you if I ever have the opportunity.
Yeah.
My name is John and mine will be the last face you see before you drown in your own blood. That's not me saying that.
No, because your name is not John.
That's
for
what
one
I'm saying.
Yeah. Plessinger said there have been no threats against Anthony. She reiterates there have been no threats.
We're going to be treating her just like any other offender.
Lie.
What happens to offenders when they come in, they give us an address, and it is public record entered into the database.
Dope.
Well,
oh.
It sounds kind of like they might be doing this a little bit on purpose.
I wonder if, can't you just sense the liver-spotted hands of Nancy Grace behind this?
Oh, Nancy Grace.
And then it'll have to be public record. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm.
And I will suck the marrow from her bones.
The best thing about this entire story, though, is that it will put her back in the public eye so that, Seamus can continue to have untoward thoughts about her. Because eventually, you know, guys are guys. They need additional visual stimulation. You just can't work off memory forever.
Wouldn't you find it extra disturbing, though, if you found out Seamus had some kind of, like, a little shrine, little Casey Anthony shrine with, like, clipped-out pictures, like, taped up on the wall, and, I mean, you know, like, he was saving all this stuff?
Yeah, I'd find it disturbing if Seamus had one of those. That'd be creepy if Seamus had that. Here's Don Taylor.
Salt Lake City police say a 29-year-old man walked into a 7-Eleven store at 1353 West Indiana Avenue.
A what store?
A 7-Eleven.
Okay.
About 10 p.m. Tuesday, took 2 40-ounce bottles of beer from a cooler and then told the clerk he wasn't paying. If he didn't like it, the beer thief said, then the clerk could call the cops. The man said he would be waiting for police in a nearby park. The clerk called 911, and officers found the man right where he said he would be. When police arrived, the suspect approached one officer and challenged him to a fight. And when a second officer moved to back him up, the man allegedly took a swing at them. After a brief struggle, police took the man into custody, handcuffed him, and booked him into Salt Lake County Jail. He is still being held today on suspicion of assault on a police officer, retail theft, resisting arrest, and having an open container of an alcoholic beverage in a public place.
In a weird way, it sounds kind of whimsical, though. Like he was just, you know, like he was out for a little adventure to go with his beverage.
It sounds like he just talked about hitting rock bottom. It's like, I have no money to buy beer. I am stealing this beer. I would like to tell you, the clerk, yes, I am stealing this beer, and I realize I will probably get arrested for this. I'm going to be in that park over there.
So just, you know, come
on. And by the time the cops show up, he's had the beer, and now he's ready to fight.
Or, you know, he wants to seal the deal, that they don't wants to make sure they don't let him off with just a warning or something.
Because he knows he's deserving of punishment for his thievery.
Incidentally, in that pile of news, there may be a duplicate in there because I may have given you the top two stories already, but there's some... By the way, our discussion of Casey Anthony just now prompts the comment, "This is untoward," says user Glory Hole Champion.
Oh, well, I can see. With a name like that...
It's got to be good.
One would be so easily offended by our hijinks.
Well, it's all relative, I suppose. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Coming up next hour, Taser Watch, Darwin Watch. Plus, we'll be joined by Mr. Greg Nibbler and Ms. Sarah X. Dillon from FunEmploymentRadio.com. They'll be in the studio with us around 2:30 as, again, Burgerville comes by with just... like 1,000 pounds of stuff, I think. I don't even really know all what they're bringing by.
I think my husband may show up and be sniffing around in the hallway just in case there's extras.
Well, I think we've got, there's at least a few people that are working on that joint right downstairs from us. So, and plus, can I just say this? I can say this because they don't know us, and I don't know. I don't think I've ever met them. Because I think we managed to drive out the people who were down there before. There was that business that was like directly one floor below us, and I think we terrified them enough that they eventually bolted.
Yeah, there was that very nice young woman who every time she'd come up to use the kitchen, we'd be talking about nail guns or midgets or
glory
some
holes.
Kind of horrible porn or something.
Yeah. What was the other time that you came up and it was just like somebody was delivering cases and cases of malt liquor or something, and they just sort of looked at us and then they just kind of slunk out. But in any event, so the people who were in there at now down below us, I have to say this, I don't know what it is that they have for brunch/lunch, but it's the most vile smelling. There's some horrible smelling food that's prepared in the kitchen up here.
Yeah.
I don't know who it is. I
opened the fridge yesterday and there was something in a container, and I swear to God it said something like eggplant hummus on top, and I just shuddered.
Yeah, it's like, why would you possibly? I mean, well, and not just that, it does, for all the world, it smells sometimes like they are microwaving year-old anchovies inside a big block of Limburger. I don't know what it is that they're actually preparing, but it is an off-putting scent, to say the least. Somebody asks, "Did your headphones arrive?" Yes, they did. Actually, this is doubly funny.
Funny story that
this is a for people who did not hear this is during the Rick Emerson show yesterday. I was online tracking the delivery of my new Sony MDR V6 headphones, which they claimed had been sent out at like 6 a.m. And by the end of the show, they still hadn't arrived. And then we opened the door at like 3:30, and there they were, literally sitting in the hallway just outside the studio door. Took them home last night, even put a photo of them up on the website. Totally forgot to bring them in this morning. So there you go. So I'm using my crusty-ass old headphones today. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
Temperatures could break records in several states today. Dallas ice cream truck driver Mustafa Kiop says the heat has been great for business.
They used to say, I may want it, I don't know, in a week or maybe 2 weeks. But today and the day before yesterday, they say, I want it today.
Okay.
This story doesn't make any sense. Who has approached him in the past and said, I want ice cream in 2 weeks?
I don't know.
Mustafa is telling us, he's selling us a bill of goods there. That's not...
I'm not sure people do that.
I don't think that actually...
You want some ice cream? And in maybe 9 days.
Yes.
That's when I will be in the mood for ice cream.
Can you get back to me on Arbor Day? Okay, that'll be wonderful, Mustafa. Thank you. Great.
Mustafa.
Jesus.
A Michigan man, there we go, was paralyzed from the chest down this past weekend when he dove into a mud pit during a 5-kilometer run that was combined with obstacles. James Saw, 21, was competing in a 5-kilometer warrior dash, which includes mud crawling, fire leaping, and tire and rope climbing obstacles. The Hope College student landed the wrong way after diving into a mud pit. Warrior dash participant Ian Vickers said, I never thought something like that could occur from having fun.
I can't believe that you've seen the word twice now in the story and you haven't said it the proper way. What did he dive into, Don?
A mud pit?
Yes, fine, fine. No.
How am I saying mud pit wrong?
No, everyone, I can't. Don, if you don't know, you can't know. It's all right. Don't worry about it. We'll read the story next hour. We'll do it properly.
Vickers is one of more than 20,000 people who participated in the two-day event. He said he saw a number of people get hurt while competing. The obstacles I breezed through, said Vickers, but you have to be very careful because some of the walls were high up. When you went into the water, you could take one step and plunge like 3 feet, so you had to be careful. You have to be careful doing the warrior dash.
It also seems like he hasn't quite cleared all the obstacles yet.
No, plus...
That last one has proven to be a bit of a sticky wicket.
Plus, I think if you're doing something that involves jumping over fire and crawling through mud, I mean, the whole idea of being careful is kind of moot, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah. Also, wouldn't you have imagined, I mean, first of all, the notion of the mud pit, so who, was it a naturally occurring mud pit, or do you suppose, or did they fashion it just for this?
I believe it was probably fashioned just for this. It was part of the obstacle
course. And as you have, I mean, who dives, which implies head first, into a pit of mud? I mean, regardless of how deep it is. In other words, he would not have been paralyzed, presumably, if it had been, let's say, 14 feet deep. And yet, if you dive headfirst into a mud pit that's 14 feet deep, you have an entirely separate problem to deal with.
Yeah, I think dive may be
that's the issue there.
Dive implies it was on purpose. Fall is probably more like...
But you don't fall...
Plunged is more like what he did.
You don't accidentally plunge head first into it unless...
Well, if your foot slips, and then, yeah, you could.
You're
climbing things and doing things and going over things.
It seems implausible that you would not just fall. I mean, that you would somehow fall directly straight down head first.
Well, like the guy did say that you have to be careful. There are some high walls, and if you went into the water, you could take a step and then fall like 3 feet. So,
All right. let's see. We have someone says, when I see people dive into pits of stuff and obstacle courses online, such as in Ninja Warrior, I always worry they may impale themselves on an undetected object in there that they can't see, like rebar or a pith helmet spike. Why would you possibly imagine someone impaling themselves on a pith helmet spike? Or in like one of those World War I, like Teutonic,
yes,
with like German helmet things, like Lily von Stupp wears. Why would you possibly imagine that? Although I have to say that anybody who's ever worked in a kitchen has had the experience of reaching into a garbage disposal that they thought was empty, and then there's a knife in there that's blade up somehow, which I did and went right under my fingernail. So, I mean, it's not like that's out of the question. All right. Later on, well, Seamus has sent me this whole thing, incidentally, clarifying his position, so to speak, with Casey Anthony.
Okay.
I could read it, or I could just not read it and then let his position continue to be misrepresented.
Oh, let's give him his say. What does he say?
Let's do it after this story. We'll make him wait.
Well, I was going to do science. So do you want to do it?
No, we'll do it on the other side of science. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, here is your Science on the March for Wednesday, August 3rd, 2011, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find out more about them at squireselectric.com or facebook.com/Squires Electric, or you can call 503-252-1609. That is 503-252-1609. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. They are Squires Electric. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, repairers, and contractors, and supervisors, and doers of things, and fixers of stuff, and repairers of your nonsense. So if you've tried to make your electrical system at home bigger, badder, better, more efficient, or perhaps you've just unplugged everything and you don't know where stuff goes, or you're not quite sure which wire to clip, because underwater, the dark blue wire and the black wire look exactly the same, and you can't hear what Vaughn is trying to tell you over your in-ear system. And you're just saying to myself, my God, I've only got 14 seconds, according to this big red digital timer, and then everything is going to explode. Contact Squires Electric. You let them know, maybe they can talk you through it. I don't know. Maybe they can give you some sort of a... maybe there's like a cheat code you can put in. It's 503-252-1609 or
just,
Squires.
Just don't waste a lot of time, you know, flirting with Donna ahead of time.
Because
that clock is ticking.
Exactly. It's not going to pay the dividends you want. Or you can go to facebook.com/Squires Electric. While you're there, please hit the like button if you would. Squires Electric, if it has to do with wires or wiring, they make your life easier. 503-252-1609. Here's Don Taylor with Science on the March.
So you know that story, that the report that Internet Explorer users scored lower on IQ tests?
Yes.
Yeah, that's not true. The report, supposedly based on a survey of 100,000 Internet users, was released last week. What appeared to be a Vancouver-based web consulting firm called Aptiquant. Major news outlets, including CNN, the BBC, NPR, CNET, Forbes, and London's Daily Mail and Telegraph, reported the story, as did multiple technology blogs. But the BBC reported Wednesday that readers raised questions about the authenticity of the study. Staff photos and information on the Aptiquant website, a fully developed portal that includes contact information, previous press releases and studies, and a supposed history of the company, appear to have been lifted from the website of a French web firm called Central Test. The company said in a post, Central Test noticed the fraudulent use of its identity by Aptiquant, a Canadian company, and deny any direct or indirect link with the above-mentioned company. The post said Central Test is investigating and reserves rights to pursue legal action. CNN.com story pointed out that the report was not scientific, that the results posted online did not provide specific score numbers, and that the whole survey smacks of a little good old-fashioned Microsoft hate.
I should say, by the way, that although we can question or, in fact, disprove the legitimacy of the study, I in no way question the accuracy of the outcome. I believe that wholeheartedly, and I think probably the most damning evidence against Microsoft in this case is the fact that no one anywhere questioned the results. Yeah, everyone just said, well, it seems about right to me.
That sounds good. Yeah. The company's website claims it was founded in 2006, but the website itself appears to have been created on July 14th, and that a physical address in Vancouver that the firm lists appears to be phony as
well. Juked my chronics. What is that?
Yeah, and on Wednesday, no one was returning messages from the email addresses listed on the Aptiquant website, and it's been speculated that the hoax could have been pulled off as performance art by someone who has a grudge against Microsoft, or by a mischief maker who gets a big laugh out of all of this.
Someone says, what this proves is merely that the news media is even dumber than the average Internet Explorer user.
Well, I've explained this to people a number of times, having, you know, worked at newspapers. The thing is, you know, whenever something like this happens and there's this outrage, like, don't you question your sources? Don't you look at, and you got to understand that people in a newsroom get, like, stacks and stacks of press releases and tons of emails and things, like, every single day. And a lot of times you get stuff, it's second or third hand. We read this story as a legitimate site, news story. I got it off of CNN. I'm trusting that CNN, you know, is telling me the truth. But somebody at CNN looks at something and just says, yeah, it looks like a legitimate press release. Let's run it.
This is like that time
You don't call every single person that you get an email from to confirm that what they're telling you is true.
It's like that time the doctors told you that Patrick's liver needed to be resected. And you went, well, they're doctors.
Yeah.
They must know what they're doing. Cheryl herself, Cheryl Kanakoa is an Internet Explorer user herself. And she says, oops, dumb me. I just deleted the entire Rick Emerson Show subscriber database. Guess I'm too stupid. Ha ha. That's very amusing. Mm. She's the exception that proves the rule,
right,
is the thing. She's the, really, that's what that's all about right there.
A badly injured sea turtle that underwent a year of rehabilitation and innovative surgeries was released Wednesday by caretakers hoping he finds a mate and helps his endangered species prosper. Andre, as the 177-pound green sea turtle is known, crawled into the water and swam out of sight before a crowd of hundreds of raucous supporters. He was near death when he was found split open and stranded last year. Dr. Nancy Mattee, a veterinarian at Loggerhead Marine Life Center in Florida, said he has overcome obstacles, predators, food scarcities, cold winters, any number of things that may have ended his life, and he's survived. He is a miracle turtle.
I don't really know. Okay, yes.
Andre was found stranded on a sandbar on June 15th of last year, and he had gaping holes in his shell, the result of two apparent boat strikes. More than 3 pounds of sand were inside him, along with at least a couple of crabs, a raging infection, and a collapsed lung. His spinal cord was exposed, pneumonia was plaguing him, and it seemed certain that he would die. Any one of those injuries could have killed him, but his flippers were working, and his neurological function seemed normal. So after beachgoers pulled him ashore on a boogie board, veterinarians began a year-long effort to save him. And now Andre the turtle has returned to the sea.
Someone says, yeah, a boat strike, sure. It was that goddamn hair. You know it was. Finish the race now, Mr. Slow and Steady.
I'll give you what...
Cheryl is apparently calling Dan at Burgerville and informing him that he is to bring me nothing but salad. All right, thank you. Thanks so much. You know, Dom was making fun of Internet Explorer people, too. Why is it Rick Emerson has to bear all the punishment?
Whose name is on the show? Who's Mr. Fancy Pants? I guess not on this show. But still, you know what I mean.
Why do I have to be the gastronomical Jesus? It's not fair.
That's the name of my next album, by the way.
Gastronomical Jesus.
Yes. Yeah. As long as American Indians have lived in the Pacific Northwest, they have looked to a jawless, eel-like fish for food. Tribes once harvested the lamprey from rivers throughout the Columbia Basin, which stretches from the Oregon coast up into Canada. But with dozens of hydroelectric dams in the way, the fish has followed the path of the buffalo, from a food staple to a curiosity.
Well, let's be fair. The buffalo just followed the path of the Indian.
Yeah. It wasn't really the hydroelectric dams that did much to the buffalo.
No.
The lamprey, of course, is the buffalo of the sea. Today, the tribes of the Northwest have one place to go for them, a 40-foot waterfall on the Willamette River, flanked by an abandoned paper mill and a power plant located about a dozen miles upstream from a Superfund site.
And those really, that's the tastiest food right there, is the kind found right next to a paper mill.
Unlike salmon, which have drawn billions of dollars in government funds to modify dams and restore habitat, the lamprey have gone largely ignored. Probably because they're really, really ugly.
They are hideous looking.
It's the tribes that still eat them that are driving the effort to bring them back. Aaron Jackson, who heads the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Reservation, said the greatest threat the fish now face is the dams, which will probably lead to their demise, which he says is really sad. The fish has survived hundreds of millions of years while other animals, like dinosaurs, didn't. That something this old could just wink out in my lifetime is unfathomable to me. The lamprey, whose English name comes from the Latin for rock sucker, uses its mouth to glom onto rocks and other fish. And anyway, in 3 weeks in July, Indians drive hundreds of miles from their reservations, wade through the water, and then pull the lamprey from the rocks and stuff them into burlap sacks to take home. And there they grill them or cut them into links and roast them like hot dogs.
The rock sucker's scientific name, though, is Pamelus debaris.
Oh.
Just FYI. Hey, here's the thing. Somebody who claims that it's unfathomable, who is the guy that's claiming that?
He's a Umatilla tribe spokesman.
All right.
He finds it unfathomable.
It's not if
he
it's
cannot fathom it.
If it's happening, it's not unfathomable.
It is to him.
Okay.
His brain simply will not accept it.
Also, whether or not anybody is upset about this is just another abuse of the language that I whether or not somebody is upset about a thing becoming extinct, there's a moment when the last of something just keels over. I mean, it's not like it's a gradual, I mean, it's not like the last of something kind of dies.
Yeah.
And then mostly dies, and then finally dies. There's either things still living of that species, or they're not. I mean, there's a moment for everything. This is like, you know what this reminds me of when he says that he can't fathom that it would go extinct? Like, no matter when it went extinct, it would be during somebody's lifetime. Is it more fathomable then?
Well, we don't know for a fact that things won't ever go extinct.
Everything goes extinct at some point.
We don't know that.
We do.
You can't
we
see
know,
into the future.
We do know that everything in the past
right.
that was extinct is once alive. And we do know that nature has killed off 99.999% of everything that has ever existed. I'm just saying.
So it's highly likely everything will go extinct.
I'm just saying the overwhelming majority of things alive right now will not be alive in like X years. So the idea that he just can't fathom that a thing that used to live doesn't live now indicates, I think, a larger problem with him than the lamprey itself.
It's just he was just sharing the workings of his own brain. He personally finds it unfathomable. Cannot imagine it. Cannot wrap his head around it. Just, nope, can't figure it out.
Okay.
The tribes have reached an agreement with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and they're working on ways to get lamprey over the dams without making it harder for the salmon. And that could be tricky. Adult lamprey grow to about 2 feet long and are about as big around as a fat hot dog. They have trouble with fast water and sharp corners, which is the way most fish ladders are designed for salmon.
And also, I think I speak for everybody when I say, screw them. They're hideous.
Also,
I mean, they're just horrible looking.
Also, the young ones, which are the size of a nightcrawler, get stuck on the screens that are designed to keep the young salmon out of the turbines.
Okay, I mean, these are things that your mind creates for you late at night for the sole purpose of ruining an evening of sleep.
They are terrifying. Well, they have created special lamprey ramps and installed them at Bonneville Dam.
I don't want a lamprey ramp.
So that... lamprey ramp. That's the stuff of nightmares, to go there and to see the lamprey, like, climbing up the ramps over the dam.
Yeah, because then they're going to learn how to go up the steps of your house.
Yeah.
You know, and they're going to use elevators.
And they have those big round mouths with the tiny little teeth like that thing in the X-Files that lived in the sewer.
And the paraglide.
Yeah.
Somebody says, Google image search lamprey if you don't believe us. That is L-A-M-P-R-E-Y. Mm-hmm. By the way, I mean, the fact that it's just got the word prey in its name indicates that it knows what it wants. It knows why it's here.
Anything whose name is a derivation of the word sucker.
Yeah.
You know, lamprey, chupacabra. These are not things that we really need to, like, save.
It's a thing you don't want to be around. No, sir.
That's all the science.
There you go. There's your science news for Wednesday, August 3rd, 2011, right here at Legion of News, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find them at squireselectric.com or facebook.com/Squires Electric. Don't forget, coming up later on this hour, entertainment news. And next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio Program at rickemersonshow.com. Today, Taser Watch, Darwin Watch, and we'll be joined by Greg Nibbler and Sarah X. Dillon of funemploymentradio.com. Plus, our good friend Dan from Burgerville, Dan Cogan, is going to be joining us. Here's Don Taylor.
I believe we were going to update us on Seamus' situation.
Oh, on Casey Anthony?
Yes.
Let's see. Hold on a second. Let me see if I can find this here. All right. I'll just find some. Let's see. Just a... Seamus says, I feel I should clarify for Dawn's benefit that I have been slightly misrepresented regarding Casey Anthony. I'm not obsessed or overly attracted to her. I'm just saying, if society is going to toss her away, why not instead toss her my way? It's a good way to punish her while putting her to good use. And then there's sort of an implied, yeah, after that. So there you go. That's Seamus. And his thoughts on Casey Anthony.
Well, thank you. A Eugene man has been convicted of an insurance scheme in which he bought and insured used cars and then staged accidents between them, claiming money for the damage. The Eugene Register Guard reports a judge has sentenced Timothy Huntley to more than 5 years in prison for the fraud, in which he collected almost $200,000 of insurance money. Huntley's defense attorney says unknown, unnamed people came up with the scheme and convinced Huntley to carry it out. Huntley was also ordered to pay back the 11 car insurance companies with which he filed claims. It's hard to imagine that you think you'd get away with it, but it's kind of a clever idea. You get a bunch of cars and crash them into each other and then file insurance claims.
I suppose, but it's the sort of thing that seems kind of obvious. It seems like it has to have been done already.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because the automobile was invented, you know, like 105 years ago or something. He can't be the first guy to go, and then if you drive this way and I drive this way and we hit each other, we can both get well, as they say. And then, you know, that never happens.
Tiger Woods is back on tour. Tiger's playing in this week's World Golf Championship event in Akron, Ohio. Tuesday, he played a practice round at Firestone Country Club and said this.
I was pretty close to being... you know, ready to go, and it's like, you know, hey, just give yourself some more days of hitting a lot of golf balls. Listen to the docs and took another week off, and thankful I did, actually, because I feel great now.
He said he now knows how to pace himself when trying to return from his injuries.
It gets a little more difficult when you get on that cusp when you're itching to go and you're borderline whether you should go or not, so... That's where I've learned my lesson from the past and not coming back too early.
I suppose it probably doesn't help things that he's, I would imagine, going on like 14 minutes of sleep every night for just banging supermodels all evening.
Yeah, the workout schedule combined with the power dating must really eat into his time.
Power dating. Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Well, you know, I'm sure he treats
an evening of polite conversation.
I'm sure
Chianti.
He treats these ladies to a lovely dinner first.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, I'm sure he takes them out on the town. Perhaps they hit a nightclub and listen to a jazz combo and have some cocktails before they retire to his place for a nightcap. I'm sure it's all very elegant and dignified, is what I'm saying.
I wasn't prepared with my irony bed. I'm sorry. I should next time. I'll have that ready to go. I didn't know. Didn't know you were going that way.
I thought
you were going one way. You went to other.
He's a rich, famous man. He probably does it upright, I'm thinking. Fancy.
And by it, you mean?
Yeah, you know.
Mm-hmm. Here's Don Taylor.
An Australian bomb squad has managed to free a teenager who had a suspected bomb attached to his body, to her body, in what may have been an extortion attempt. The ordeal ended shortly after midnight local time, which would have been 10 a.m. here, and police are still unsure whether the device was an explosive. Local police have been given conflicting reports to the Associated Press and Australian media about the exact nature of the device, which was described as very elaborate and sophisticated. Police spokesman refused to say whether it was tethered to the 18-year-old's body, saying only she had been kept in a very uncomfortable position throughout the ordeal. But The Australian, which I believe is a newspaper, reports the police have confirmed the device was indeed attached to the girl. New South Wales State Police Assistant Commissioner Mark Murdoch said, I've been doing this job for a long time, and this is certainly up there in terms of being unusual and difficult to deal with. I've never heard of anything like this in Australia before. An earlier report in Sydney's Daily Telegraph said a senior police officer described the device as an unusual collar bomb, as in a collar around her neck, and that it was part of an extortion attempt. Murdoch said it was far too early to say whether it was part of an extortion plot, although he added, you would hardly think that someone would go to this much trouble if there wasn't a motive behind it.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't even remember the outcome of this, but whatever happened, there was a thing like this that happened in the States, I don't know, a couple years ago, but it was like with the pizza guy. Where the pizza guy, like, showed up to deliver a pizza, and, like, the next time they saw him, like, he had one of those, like, Jean-Claude Van Damme collars around his neck that was, like, and they sent him to a bank or something. And he's like, I don't know, they stuck the collar around me, and then it's going to blow up if you don't give me all your cash. Whatever happened to that guy?
I'm not sure. There's actually a movie coming out, like, in a week, a comedy that is based basic plot. In fact, there's a screening of it tonight. It's called 30 Minutes or Less.
It's not called Saw 12?
No, no. And it's, what's his name, from the Facebook movie. And
oh, that's right. No, it is. It's. I saw the ad for that the other day. Actually,
it actually looks really funny. I'm going to try and get to the screening.
But do you remember the story I'm talking about the pizza delivery guy that had the bomb collar put around his neck?
Vaguely,
I don't even remember how that. This is an indication, by the way, of how quickly news develops and how fast society just sponges things out of your brain and replaces them with other things. I don't even remember how that story ended. I don't remember if the guy blew up. I don't remember if the cops disabled it. I don't remember if it ended up being a dummy bomb somehow. I don't remember if the guy ended up somehow being involved with the folks who did it. I just remember sitting there watching, I think it was CNN or something, and there was a guy just sitting out there on the ground because he had a bomb collar on his neck. It's amazing that kind of thing doesn't happen more often, because it seems like that's kind of a foolproof plan. You know, if you're able to put a bomb around a guy and then you send him out, he's presumably innocent, and then you send him out to rob a bank for you.
It is a rather complicated thing, though. You'd have to have the technical skill to actually create the bomb.
But see, that's not true, though, because you don't have to create the bomb. You only have to create something that will convince the cops that there's a bomb.
That's true. Convince the guy that you strap it to that it's a bomb.
Yeah,
really,
but that guy's
foremost.
But he's easy to fool. I mean, the cops who have probably seen that kind of thing. But if you can create something that convinces people who are not able to get close enough to inspect it that it's a bomb.
You don't want to be like that guy on Justified.
No. You're thinking like a road flare? Or you just...
I come from mining country. I know what dynamite looks like
You've just got some, like, cardboard tubes from inside paper towel rolls that you put around the guy's neck. So, I'm not saying everybody should do that as, you know, as, like, a way to get paid. I'm just saying it seems like, Oh, he blew up, apparently, the guy. Well, that's a sort of a downer end of the story.
That's sad. All right.
Okay.
Well, on a happier note, let's have a better time. There's a story that was sent to me by multiple listeners, because all of whom said happily furry news, because they knew that we're fascinated by furries. Police in Idaho Falls, Idaho, have told a man to stop wearing a bunny suit in public after people complained he's been frightening children. Residents in the northwestern U.S. city of 54,000 people also reported that William Falkingham, 34, occasionally wears a tutu with his bunny suit. Police warned Falkingham after a woman said she saw him dressed in the costume, peeking at her young son from behind a tree and pointing his finger like a gun. While the police report said the other residents were greatly disturbed by his activities, one neighbor defended Falkingham as eccentric but otherwise harmless. Uh-huh. Deborah Colson told Reuters, he's got the bunny outfit, a cowboy suit, and a ballerina dress, but you don't see him except when he's tripping through his backyard. He's got a strange lifestyle at home, but we all do weird things at home.
I'm sure. At home is I think, the operative phrase here.
Falkingham told officers he enjoys wearing the suit, but understands the concerns and that he could be cited as a public nuisance.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's make sure to revisit that story next hour, because that will certainly unnerve Sarah. I can't speak for anybody else, but she'll be creeped out to the core by that.
Let's do our entertainment news.
All right. Here's your entertainment news for Wednesday, right here at Legion of News.
In 1964, an enterprising 18-year-old snapped pictures of the Beatles' momentous first U.S. concert in Washington, D.C. Today, Christie's Auction House said it sold 50 silver gelatin prints that the photographer made from the negatives for $361,938.
Wow.
The images plus photos from another Beatles concert had been estimated to fetch a total of $100,000. The Beatles played their first U.S. concert at the Washington Coliseum on February 11, 1964, 2 days after their debut on The Ed Sullivan Show. Mike Mitchell was there shooting photos from just feet away and even jumping onto the stage for the group's pre-concert press call. Among the highlights of the backlit is a backlit shot of the band that he took while standing directly behind them. It sold on Wednesday for $68,500. Its pre-sale estimate was $2,000 to $3,000. There's an image of an animated Ringo Starr on the drums, which sold for over $8,000. Chrissy said the shot depicts a rare moment where Starr was both drummer and lead singer on a song. Kathy Elkies, Christie's director for Iconic Collection, said she expected the bids to exceed the pre-sale estimates. She said, "Beatles fans are fierce. To uncover this trove of images that's never been published will really excite people." It's also been in discoveries. It's been announced that the first 30 minutes of The White Shadow, believed to be the earliest surviving feature credited to Alfred Hitchcock, has been discovered in a New Zealand archive. It had been sitting there, according to the Los Angeles Times, in a cache of unidentified and highly unstable American nitrate prints since the late 1980s, mislabeled as twin sisters. When Hitchcock worked on The White Shadow as writer, assistant director, editor, and production designer, he was only 24 years old. His feature directorial debut, The Pleasure Garden, was still 2 years away. Film historians note that the discovery offers an unprecedented chance to study how Hitchcock began to develop his distinctive Hitchcock-ness. In fact, it was the visual mastery of two frames, one of a woman smoking and one of a pair of hands holding an array of playing cards, that first tipped off an archivist that these particular reels might be something special.
And so I actually don't even know what The White Shadow is. I mean, we're obviously not talking about the 1970s feel-good drama. So I don't even... Is it a movie? It's a film?
It's a film from the 1920s. It was an atmospheric melodrama with a woman named Betty Compson in the dual role as twin sisters, one who was good and one who was evil. And it's one of those movies. It's got mistaken identities and romance and chance meetings. And apparently also even the transmigrations of souls. It says the wild plot crams a lot into six reels. There are three reels that survive in which the evil twin goes missing and then resurfaces in Paris where she's a regular in bohemian nightclubs.
Okay, then.
She's a free spirit of the 1920s and, you know, evil. So... The San Francisco Chronicle is reporting that Lucinda Moyers, the woman suspected of entering Alex Trebek's hotel room last week in an attempted burglary, could serve 25 years to life if convicted under California's three strikes law. The statute allows juries to sentence defendants who are guilty of at least two previous violent or serious acts to 25 years to life. The representative for the district attorney stated the supposed break-in met the requirements for violent felony charges because Trebek and his wife were in the room at the time. Moyer's two previous burglary charges date back to the early 90s, and she served an eight and a half years of a 15-year sentence from 1997 to 2006 on a third burglary charge. Charlie Sheen. Oh, yeah, we already know about Charlie Sheen. Who cares?
Just the funeral?
Yeah, and the withdrawing the lawsuit and the whatnot and the hoo-hoo. Redmond O'Neill, the son of Ryan O'Neill and Farrah Fawcett, was arrested Tuesday in Santa Monica, California, when police allegedly found heroin in his car. The 26-year-old O'Neill, who has struggled with substance abuse for years and served time in jail and rehabilitation facilities for drug-related offenses, was also charged with violating probation and a red light infraction. He's being held without bail while awaiting a court appearance. The advocacy group GLAAD rated ABC Family as excellent in its portrayal of gay and lesbian characters, only the second television network to get such a designation in the 5 years the group has monitored television. ABC Family, the top-rated cable network among viewers aged 12 to 34, and particularly strong among girls and young women, was cited for both a large number of gay and lesbian characters and the way those characters fit naturally into the shows. The only other network judged excellent by the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation was MTV last year. Michael Riley of ABC Family said, "We are incredibly proud to be honored and acknowledged by GLAAD. It's very important for us."
So this is really just evidence that for example, the cast of Gossip Girl, they need to work in more sequences where there's long lingering kisses inside a jacuzzi of some kind.
Yes.
And that everybody's fine with it the next day, and the parents understand it is a valid lifestyle choice.
They did note that Pretty Little Liars features Emily, one of the teenage girls, as an athlete who came out as a lesbian. The Secret Life of the American Teenager has several gay and lesbian characters in the past year, including a mother who told her son she was a lesbian. Make It or Break It has a recurring character who is bisexual. And the just-concluded series Greek had four GLAAD Media Award nominations and included a love story of a gay fraternity brother. Faye Dunaway will be packing up her Oscars and moving out if her Manhattan landlord has his way. The New York Times reports Dunaway's landlord filed a lawsuit yesterday alleging Dunaway does not live in her rent-stabilized apartment on New York's Upper East Side. Instead, the landlord insists Dunaway's son, Liam Dunaway O'Neill, lives in the one-bedroom walk-up, while Dunaway maintains her actual residence in California. New York's rent stabilization rules require tenants to live in the apartment they are renting as a primary residence, not a second home. Dunaway's eviction would allow her landlord to increase the rent. She currently pays $1,048.72 per month in a neighborhood where a comparable apartment runs $2,300.
I'm a resident. I'm homeless. I'm a resident. I'm homeless.
Dunaway is set to report to civil court on August 11th.
Okay.
And I think that's all the editor.
Really, every Faye Dunaway story is just an opportunity for me to try to do some variation on that gag. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. And also don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program coming up next hour. That is next hour at rickemersonshow.com. We'll have a Taser Watch, a Darwin Watch, and Greg and Sarah from funemploymentradio.com will be here as well. Did you say is that the end of entertainment?
That is the end of all the entertainment.
End
ever.
Of entertainment. And you go right here on Cascadia.fm. It is Wednesday, August 3rd, 2011. Here is Don Taylor.
Secretary of Transportation Ray LaHood has a way for Congress to resolve the Federal Aviation Administration funding standoff that has thousands of workers in limbo.
Let's see. What is the name of this?
That
is this airlines?
Come back to Washington. Leave your vacations. Just for a couple hours. Come back, Congress. Help your friends and neighbors get back to work.
I don't think he's... that may not have the seriousness that that we were thinking it would.
I don't think so.
Is he doing a Shane thing there? I can't quite tell.
No.
Sort of, Congress, come back. Yeah. Maybe not.
No, maybe not.
Okay.
A sneaky squirrel knocked a South Carolina TV station off the air this morning during the 6 o'clock news hour. The power in and around Columbia, South Carolina, went out around 6:15 a.m. Station WIS meteorologist Ben Tanner was in the middle of his weather forecast when the surge caused everything to flicker and shut down at the studios. Generators kicked in right away, but several of the computers in the building had to be reset. After a couple of minutes, Susan Elizabeth Littlefield was back on the air. The electric company said a squirrel made its way to an area where it shouldn't have been and caused a problem with one of their breakers. There is no word on the condition of the squirrel.
Okay. Are we sure the squirrel was actually clever?
Did it say it was clever?
Yeah, I believe it was cunning, clever.
What
did it say?
Squirrel.
Sneaky.
He's sneaky.
You could argue that he had inadvertent stealth, perhaps.
Right. He was in and around an area he should not have been, so I guess technically he was sneaking.
All right. Well, fair enough.
But he probably meant no actual harm.
No, he probably was, hey, look at the shiny thing of it.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And then just fried squirrel and no newscast.
Nothing.
Right. Nothing.
We got like a minute and a half here.
Okay. The Oregon State Marine Board has approved a grant to purchase and install a floating restroom on Timothy Lake in the Mount Hood National Forest.
And boy, is he pissed off about it.
The floating restroom trailer and anchoring system is expected to cost $131,000. Of that final fee, $1,000 will be covered by in-kind contributions, $32,500 will come from Portland General Electric, and $97,500 from the federal grant through the Clean Vessel Act. PGE will also maintain the unit under agreement with Clackamas County, and the Forest Service will allow the restroom on National Forest property. The Oregon State Marine Board is funded entirely by user fees, and the revenue generated from the fees goes back to boaters in the form of boating facility improvements, law enforcement services, and apparently floating bathrooms. So enjoy that.
Okay. There you go.
Do
so
we
there's,
really,
there's
we, haven't,
we got 29 seconds.
29 seconds. I have nothing that will fill 29 seconds. Here we go. Colorado wildlife officials say they are seeing a spike in the number of bear break-ins to cars and homes in the southeastern part of the state. Jennifer Churchill of Parks and Wildlife said, "The southeast is having a tough year this year. They haven't had much rain." She said with the weather pattern, there isn't much natural food, and the bears are looking to feed themselves. The department is getting 10 to 12 bear calls per day in the area. The Maynard family was one of them. They live in Monument, Colorado, and took video of two bears sitting in their pond and playing in their backyard. One bear broke into their freezer in the garage and started eating the ice cream. The family says they are seeing bears several times a week. They say it's fun, but they're cautious. David Maynard said, "I just don't leave the house."
Fantastic. Excellent.
Also, in July, a bear near Leadville, Colorado, went into a tent and bit a teenage boy. So, and another guy found a bear in his basement.
And on that note, we will do this, which is bringing another curtain on another exciting episode of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. We thank you for joining us at the news desk. Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Radio program is next hour at rickemersonshow.com, and we will see you again tomorrow here, that is Thursday at noon, for another exciting installment of Legion of News. Until then, we thank you for listening. Have a safe and satisfying Wednesday, won't you?